Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. Are you looking to gain confidence in your painting practice and improve your sense of color, composition, drawing? At Not Sorry Art School, I teach representational painting techniques that'll help you feel more in control of your art and elevate your abilities. With 16 courses from color theories to master studies, painting water, portrait painting, and our latest edition, painting fabric, you'll have everything you need to master representational painting. With access to current and future courses, a supportive community, and personalized feedback, you'll be well on your way to achieving your artistic goals. Lifetime students get full access to all of this, but if you're not ready to commit yet, try our free 7-day boot camp. This is a great way to experience a bite-sized version of what our full course has to offer. To become a lifetime student or check out the 7-day boot camp, make sure to click the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say that today's episode is sponsored by my book. I have a book coming out. I'm so proud of this, guys. The links are already up. I'll have them in the show notes. But the book is called Modern Still Life, From Fruit Bowls to Disco Balls. It is my take on a step-by-step painting book. I am really excited about it. Not only does it have like motivational tips and tricks to keep you going in your practice, but it also has clear and beautiful and full color breakdowns of the step-by-step process in my paintings. So I could not be more excited about it. If you wanted to check it out, order it. It would help me more than you even know. Hey y'all, welcome back to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. I'm really excited for y'all to check out my conversation today with Matt Kumpian, an arts professional in New York City, originally from Southeast Texas. Mac wears many hats living in the art capital of the world as she works at the Metropolitan Museum of Art as an educator, manages a studio for a prominent New York City artist, as well as teaching as an adjunct professor at her alma mater, Lamar University. How I connected with Mac was, of course, through TikTok, where I found her sharing her insights and experiences on her TikTok, which is at MattFax. I highly recommend it as it's an inside look into the New York City art scene. Her page is especially insightful for those interested in working in the arts who may not be sure how to break into it. Also, Mac and I share similar experiences about our upbringing below the poverty line. And in this discussion, we highlight the obstacles as well as the opportunities that can present themselves in an art world that prides itself in being insular. I hope you enjoy this conversation. And for more on Mac, you can follow her on TikTok, of course, or visit her website, mackumpian.com. I'll make sure to show everything in the show notes. As always, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Hi, Mac. Thank you so much for joining me on my podcast today. I am so excited to chat with you, and I know my audience is going to love this episode. I feel like you are a jack of all trades in like the best possible way. So just a warm invite to you, and yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I also kind of like when people call me the jack of all trades because I'm like a Mac of all trades.
That's so cute. You've got to, oh my gosh, trademark that. You've got to trademark that. That's genius. I will not be able to stop thinking about that. That's hilarious. Yeah. So before we jump in, could you just tell me a little bit like your title, what you do? I know we just said you're a Mac of all trades. So
yes.
I would love to hear everything that you do as an arts professional.
Yes. I like using the term arts professional just because it's like good umbrella. But right now I'm working freelance. I have 4 different gigs going on that I've been doing for the past 2 years or so. So first and foremost, I work as a museum educator at an art museum. I also work as like a studio assistant / manager for an artist. I say assistant / manager because I'm the only person that works there. So I do everything.
Yeah.
And then I am an adjunct professor in a Department of Art and Design. And then I also dabble in the social media. So I help do like social media management. And then it's not really a job, but I take it as seriously as a job. But doing my own TikTok account, which is MacFax, which Mac is my name, obviously, but yeah. Also the acronym Museum Arts and Culture, which just brings us all back to I'm a Mac of all trades.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That was so poetic and beautiful. Oh my gosh. And yes, I absolutely think TikTok is totally a valid career. I mean, my first, like, I would say maybe even as far as 2 years, I was doing art. I was painting. So it's a little different from what you're doing, but for free, basically. And so yeah. I mean, you have to start somewhere. And yeah. So I think it's totally valid.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of it as an extension of me being an educator and like also like, more of what we're going to talk about today, like kind of bringing like accessibility and like shining like a little bit of light on a field that can feel so exclusive and elusive at times. So I like to think of my account as just like an extension of me being an educator. And yeah, I really enjoy doing it. It's like a hobby, but also hopefully helping a few people here
Yeah, it
and
definitely
there.
does. And I will say, if I can plug it right early in the podcast, your TikTok is fantastic. I am an artist living in Austin, which is like it's a great city, but it is not New York City. And in the art world, it is like, kind of the big deal. And so I've really enjoyed, I feel like I've learned so much from you. Just even like I don't know, the environment in New York City and art in New York City. And I read about it, in New Yorker articles and stuff like that. But it's just so cool to see it in real time through your eyes. And also you're fun to follow because like if you want to like visit New York and you're like wondering what you do such a great job like covering pretty extensively, at least from my purview, like all the cool stuff happening in New York in the art scene. So like
Thank you
it really
for
isn't just like
blushing.
you just casually like will post every other week. Like you are really doing it as if it was like a legit job. So I mean it, and it is, but I'm just saying like
Yeah. I
quality
mean,
content.
that's
That's a
one
long way
thing
of saying
about me is when
it.
I do something, I go hard. So
Yeah,
thank
you can
you.
tell and it pays off. But I wanted to speak a little bit just like what you were saying a minute ago, which is that the art world can be a little bit elusive. And I'm so grateful that you brought that up right from the get-go because I think people don't always address that. And I know in me, that's manifested as like, am I doing something wrong? Am I not researching enough? But to hear you, and I've heard this obviously in the decade that this has been my job, more people are starting to be like, yeah, it's a little, there's some smoke and mirrors to it. Like, obviously, the art world, I always say, is like a huge umbrella. Like, if you sell a painting to a neighbor, like, congrats, you're part of the art world. Like, it's everyone. But it's also a lot of like New York City, behind the scenes happenings. So, could you walk me through, like, how you found it to break into working in New York in the art scene, and like maybe what were some of the challenges that clued you into like the smoke and mirrors quality of the New York art scene?
Well, for anyone that doesn't know, me and Sari kind of have like a connection, not just because of the arts, but because I grew up in Southeast Texas and we kind of had like a similar upbringing. So, growing up in Texas, I actually think you and I talked about this whenever I came to visit your studio over the summer. But like, there are different art worlds too. Like you being in your small town and going into like your small art museum or going to like a farmer's market where there's artisans selling stuff, like that is also an art world in a sense. And that's something that I really took advantage of whenever I'm from Beaumont, Texas, if you've heard of it. And there's a lot of great artists that live there. The artist that I work for is actually he grew up there as well. That's kind of how we got connected. So it just kind of goes to show that like kind of leaning into the community that you have is like really important and can like help you build up to whatever it is, even if that just means you being more involved in the community that you're in. I grew up like always being interested in art. Like I always did it as my elective at school. I did dance like all throughout college. I loved theater. So it was never something that I like didn't find value in. It was more so that I didn't think of it as an actual profession for myself until I got older, literally when I was in college and I was like, oh, like I could be a teacher, I could be an art teacher, I could work at a museum, and I felt like I kind of all figured that out over, and I'm still figuring it out, what possibilities there are for me. But I had the idea that I wanted to work in a museum by the time that I was finishing school. So I did my degree in art education. And then as you said, kind of like figuring this all out and like figuring out the smoke and mirrors, it was like so much of it was just me just like figuring it out and like Googling and researching. And like something that I still recommend to people today that they should do is like when I was living in Beaumont and working at the museum, and I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, I'd really love to work at like this big museum. I would literally go on LinkedIn, and like search people that worked, because you can see who works at the institution and find someone who had a job that I would be like interested in, that I'm like, oh, I could do something like that. And I'd see where their career path was, which we'll talk more, I'm sure, about how it's not always as linear as that. But that helped me kind of get, okay, well, first they started doing this and then this, and they studied this in school, they did these kinds of extracurriculars. That kind of stuff was helpful. I'm not even sure if I really answered your question, but
No, you did. You did. That's great. Yeah. So I mean, it sounds like the thing that stands out to me from your answer is, this word gets used a lot, but persistence. But I want to say there's a
yes.
persistence that comes from, I think, when you grow up more like blue collar, working class, that is, I don't know if it's always talked about, but it's like, how, like, I'm trying to think how to phrase this, but it's not just like you don't get invited into some spaces, you know what I mean? And I think some people take the fact that there's not a more clear cut path, that it's like, it's not, I don't know, it's not so clear. You're not given like a syllabus in school about it. Like, it's really, you just have to be scrappy. And like, it sounds like what you did, where it's like, who is there and what did they do and who do they know? And it really is like, it's persistence and more than just like continuing to show up and do it, but in like, you have to apply the same creativity that you would to your art into your career path, is what I've largely found.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, like, not that there's anything wrong with this. It's just something that I've observed, like growing up, below the poverty line, and like with a single parent, like, these are all things that like I've grown up dealing with. Is just like sometimes you just like have to do it, or you just like have to figure it out, and like there's literally no other choice. Like you can't fail, so you have to figure it out. And I do think, obviously at times I get upset and I get like frustrated, and I'm like, it's so unfair. Like these people, they have their parents paying their rent and stuff. And then there are other times where I'm like, water off my back, like I have this grit in me that they will probably never be able to work towards. And like, for them, it's easy to like quit something if it's not exactly what they expected, or for them to just say no or not show up to things because, it's all gonna work out no matter what. But then there's people like us where it's just like, you gotta do what you gotta do, not just to like take care of yourself, but to like get the things that you want out of your life,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a scrappiness, and it's, I mean, like what you just said, I think really is probably going to strike a chord with a lot of people. But I have found, and not just even personally anecdotes, but there is a lot of data. I'll include some in the show notes. I know there was a really extensive study in the UK, which I know is not America, but we rank similar on like social mobility. I think they're like 11th and we're 16th. But anyways, it was talking about how, since the 1960s, when they started looking at this data, less and less people from working class, which working class is a pretty broad umbrella. Like, you can have all your needs met and be working class, and you can be all the way down to like poverty line. So put a pin in that. But, there used to be a significantly higher number of people from working class in the arts, and that's music, visual arts, theater, et cetera. And it's dramatically gone down. I'll include the show notes, and hopefully I can have it pop up somewhere. But it used to be something like 20% of people in working arts were from working class, and then now it's like less than 10% or something like that. And when I was reading this, I think it was like an artsy article, or yeah, maybe hyperallergic, or anyways, but they were saying that that's way worse now, and it's just as bad in the United States. And so, pointing out that a lot of times the people who are in these spaces, and I don't blame them for it. I think if I had a, someone who could help me out financially, that
I
would have
would
been
take
great. I would have
advantage of
taken
it
it.
too. Like, yeah,
But
100%.
no, I mean, there's not really a bad guy here. It's always a tough thing about talking about
Like, yeah,
class,
like
but
the
rather,
system.
yeah, it's a system. No, 100%. But when you're in these spaces and you look to your left and someone, their husband's an engineer and that's how they're making it work, which is again great and fantastic, and you look to someone else and their parents are helping them out, it can be really, I think, discouraging. And I completely related to what you said about kind of vacillating between like feeling tough and like, yeah, I can do it, and confident because I did it myself, and then also like deeply discouraged. And so, not to make it sound sad, but like, do you have any moments that you can think of that were discouraging to you that you ended up like fighting through?
I something I think about all the time, and it's something at the same time where I'm like, erg, like it bothers me that it's like this, but also like wow, this is also something that can like help me with my confidence, because everyone deals with imposter syndrome, as they say these days.
Yeah,
Things
100%.
like that. But I went to grad school at NYU. I studied museum studies, which everyone has their own opinions about a formal education. I fully plan on running from the government to pay off my student loans for the rest of my life. So, like, I'm okay with that, and that's fine.
Yeah, no, I feel you right there. New alias, yeah.
But there are so many times, like, I can remember literally like the first week of school, like, we're all sitting around, and there's like cultural things here and there that I was like, ooh, I kind of like don't fit in here yet. But even things just like, we would go around the room and people would, you're supposed to say your name and where you're from and where you went to school, and everyone's like, UC Berkeley and UCLA and Notre Dame and Pratt and like all these huge name schools. And then I go, and like, I went to junior college
Yeah, which is
and like, I
great.
went to a school that no one's ever heard of. And then I say that, they're like, where did you go to school? I'm like, oh, you've probably never heard of it. It's a small school in Texas. And they're like, what's it called? And I'm like, Lamar University. And they're like, yeah, you're right, I've never heard of that. I'm
They were
like,
thinking like
I
maybe it's
know.
rice or something, and you're like,
Yeah, I'm like,
no.
no, probably like you've never heard of it.
Literally, yeah.
And there's a part of me that's like, ooh, like that stings a little bit, in the sense that like it sucks that all, like, majority of the people in the room with me, I would say there was probably like three of us that out of my class of 30 people, like, kind of went to a school that no one had ever heard of, and didn't have like these fancy internships before we showed up for grad school and stuff. There was just a few of us, and like a part of me is like, it sucks that more like normies, I guess, like can't like
I
be a
like
part of this or
it.
aren't. But also at the same time, it makes me feel proud to be like, okay, all of these people who, like, as we said, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just the realities that, like, all these people whose like parents have paid for their tuition and probably pay there for their rent, and like, even like the emotional support that people get sometimes that other people don't. Like, I know that that was something that I always struggled with. I'm like, okay, even if your parents are like not paying your bills, like, having the emotional support of a family behind you, like, is something that can be so helpful in itself. And yeah, like, not having those things and having to like kind of figure it out on my own, and that was something I'm like, I'm sitting at the same table as all of these people. Like, we all had to do the same admissions process, and I got in and I got a scholarship, so it's like that part, I'm like, you go, girl. Like,
And no, and you should be so proud. And I think, the thing that always buffered me, because I like that you even brought up like even not having the emotional support, because like I said, everyone's doing the best they can, and like everyone's families, whatever they can contribute is great. But yeah, especially when you don't have parents like even rooting for you, which is like, you can't put that on your FAFSA, but it is part of the equation. Is huge, because the art world, and I maybe I assume this is another other fields too, but I can speak to the art world. There is a lot of, because there isn't a clear cut way of how to do it, because there is such a heavy lean towards people who have financial help to be able to make it in this industry. It can be one of those jobs where you're really doubting yourself. I think there's a lot of doubt that comes with it, even if you are a pretty confident, mellow person. And not being able to sort of be like, yeah, have a family that's like cheering for you and rooting you on can be really hard. So I'm curious, what you have to buoy you. And I'll give you what I have, like my mental thing when I'm having a hard time. I always just say like the arts are good because there's diversity, right? Like the power of art is that you see humanity in someone, whether you're writing about art, teaching about art, making art, in working in a museum. Like we need so many different points of view that when I'm having a hard time and feeling really imposter syndrome-y, to use that language, I remind myself that like having like a poor girl from the Ozarks, like whose parents struggled with drug addiction, like that is a point of view that needs to be seen. And as much as it can feel embarrassing and shameful, and I don't feel that way all the time, I just have moments of it, I know it's important to show up and do those things. So I'm curious, like what gets you through those hard times when you wish you had a family, when you wish you had the financial security, like what helps you?
I would say, like, definitely agree. Like, sometimes I work at a museum that's in a very affluent area, and so a lot of the people that I interact with on the day-to-day basis, like, are, like, I don't, not the 1%, but they're up there. They're like, have fancy townhomes and stuff. And yeah, that those sometimes there's those times where I'm like, this is like a little embarrassing, but yeah, like at the same time, when I'm working with kids, I'm like, yeah, it is important that they like have this perspective. And I also think, like, not to be like, oh, woe is me, but like I think sometimes it's really easy to look at someone like me or you and be like, oh, they're just like a privileged little white girl working in the arts. And I'm like, no, not quite. I mean, like, in a sense, yes, but I remember when I was in high school and people would be like, blah, 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 like your dad. And I'd be like, oh, I don't have a dad. And they'd be like, really? I wouldn't have thought that about you. And I'm like,
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You don't always know.
Yeah, I'm
No,
like,
yeah. I mean, it's for sure.
that's
There absolutely is white privilege, 1,000%. And
yes, one
I
thousand
always
percent.
think it's hard to see your advantages. Like, I've had relatively good health and all those things. But yeah, to
Yes.
your point, I always think it's a hard spot because, like, on one hand, in the arts, being a white, cis woman makes you very overrepresented in some ways. But then the
Yes.
having the class dynamic, and especially, I always consider, I'm not sure how you consider it, but the Ozarks and poverty, even a cultural disadvantage to some degree. So that's always like my thing is like, and that's kind of why I think I love art because like I can speak to that without it being like, without it, I have a place to like metabolize that frustration, but it is, but to your point, it's a hard thing to carry around because you want to make space for other struggles, but you're also like, yeah, I don't, my
And
dad's
it's
on
not
drugs.
like a yeah, like you said, like we do have a privilege in a sense, but it's also like we also have disadvantage in a sense that it's something that's like not visual. Like we have to tell these people these things, but I think, like, to go back to your question, and I think something that I have learned as I've gotten older, and also like as I've succeeded things, and like being able to reflect on like where I came from and how maybe other people would have came out of that situation. Like, it used to almost embarrass me when people would be like, oh, we're so proud of you. Like, even now, like to this day, like I had a friend's one of my friends from growing up, like her parents came to town, and like I took them to the museum and stuff, and they were like, we're just so proud of you. And I was literally like, this is I'm uncomfortable. But I am able to tell myself that and not feel any sort of discomfort. Like, I'm like, yeah, you should be proud of yourself. Like, you're awesome. Like, you're doing so great. And so I think, like, kind of in those moments, like, not only saying, like, that it's important that everyone's story get told, that myself included, but that I should be proud of myself.
Yeah,
You
absolutely.
should
No, and
too.
yeah, don't worry. Yes, I have like a written out like pep talk for myself just because, yeah, I mean, the arts are hard. They're like, you get into one thing, you get rejected from 10. So you really do have to do, I think the responsible thing is to like do the legwork to like build yourself up. And it's obviously gonna be different for everyone with their own unique struggles. A lot of the thing that's actually helped me is like studying persistent poverty. So it's like I'm gonna veer off topics ever so slightly, but there's a threshold that after you spend, I think, like 10 or more years below the poverty line as a child, statistically, your rate of like getting out of poverty like goes like nosedives, like it goes dramatically down. And a lot of that has to do with like networking. Like if you don't have connection, you're more likely to stay in poverty because a lot of Americans, it's actually very common to need assistance, fall below the poverty line, and then sort of use the safety net programs, so like SNAP and housing support and things like that, and then you get back on your feet. That's like a lot of the people who use safety nets, that's the like predominant trajectory. But some people, like my parents, struggled with drug addiction and alcoholism, so we stayed below the poverty line. And so a lot of like studying that and having that out, like when I'm feeling down about myself, like maybe it's counterintuitive, but like looking at that makes me feel more proud of myself because I'm like, even though that's like statistically where I should have ended up. So having
Yeah,
that
I
written
also,
out.
yeah, also like kind of similar, but about art world. Like, I remember you told me once about like what your teacher had told you, like, oh, like only like 10 of you are gonna make it and be like a working artist. And yeah, you can word it how you want.
No, it's true. I mean, this would have been in 2014. So I think with social media, things changed because if I remember back to 2014, like Instagram was still like snap a picture of your food, put a Valencia filter on it. Like it was just different. But he said that like less than, I think it was less than 5%. It was like egregiously small of people who graduate master's or bachelor's with a studio arts degree, will be working in that profession in 10 years. So it's a huge drop off. Again, I think it might be less bad now, but it's that can be so like take the wind out of your sail. But I think a lot of it brings me to the next question I really want to ask you, which is sort of dealing with like the balance between like following your passion and pragmatism. And I think really a lot of artists who are sort of being financially supported a little, and that could be things like if things go wrong, I'll pay your rent all the way to I'm paying your rent every month. But people who have that lovely, great buffer that I think most people should have, all people should have, you don't have to be so pragmatic like you do when it's like, hey, the next stop is like living in your car, which is like a lot more hardcore. How do you balance like dealing with like the practical part of like pursuing a career in the arts with like the, the harder parts of that? So like balancing how to like make it all work financially.
I think well, one thing that I think kind of like mentally keeps me going is just that like I don't have another option. Like I know I've said that, but really like people are like, how do you do it? And I'm like, I don't have a choice. Like I have to go to work. Like I have to do these things.
100%.
Like I don't have another option. But also like doesn't mean I can't enjoy it and like find joy in it. Obviously I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't because
No,
it's
the joy.
hard work.
That's a really important, I think, part to bring up. But like, is that part of your, I have no other option, but like, but you could go work, you could move back home. You could, I mean, like, it's
I
not.
mean that does I almost doesn't feel like so the artist that I worked for, he has always said like he does a lot of lectures at schools and stuff, to studio art programs, whatever. And something he says a lot that has really stuck a chord with me is that you shouldn't be doing this unless it's an obsession, because like it's just not, it's not for the faint of heart. And like, okay, obviously there's a group of people that like you have resources that make it available for you to like try these things out and maybe realize that it's not for you. But yeah, something that like has helped me a lot. I'm like, I feel like I do need to do this. Like, I'm like, this is like, I am obsessed with this. And like, yes, part of it is like, I don't have a choice. Like, I need to have a job. But also, it's like, I need to be doing this job because I know that it makes me happy and I know that it's what I'm good at. So I think that's kind of like a balance. What was the question
No, that's great. No, I think that's
again?
wonderful. So correct me if I'm wrong, but like part of how you sort of, because I'm saying all this to give you a tremendous amount of credit. Like it's statistically rare to be, again, from the working classes and like making it work, like on your W-2, you're doing all of your jobs in the arts, and it does sound like you're definitely hustling right now, but it's really commendable. So I'm curious, like you said basically you're balancing this like very relatable to a lot of Americans. If I don't do it, like I can't survive. Like it's just not an option. Like I just don't, like not doing it isn't right. But then also this like compulsion to be like, and I do it in the arts because I love it and I'm obsessed with it. And that's kind of how you balance that.
Well, yeah, and like honestly, on like the more practical side of things, like which I feel like maybe is how you imagine I would answer
No, this is great. All of it.
is
Love
like
it.
when like I can remember when I was in undergrad, and like now I'm a teacher at where I went to undergrad, so like I try to like share this information with a lot of my students or like people who reach out to me like on TikTok and are like, how did you do this? Like when I was in school, like I did junior college and I was like working in an office like randomly at the university, at the college. And then like once I transferred, like that first year I was trying to like make it all work. And so like I was working as like a substitute teacher, which I remember I'd put on my resume and I put guest educator instead. Like I'm like
I
trying to
love
like
it.
make
Good
it
turn
like
of phrase.
relevant to like what I'm doing. And then like I was working at a jewelry store, which like I mean all of these things are actually were helpful for me, but it's like that maybe wouldn't be like the first thing that pops into your mind. But like now like I can be like, oh, like me working at this jewelry store, like helped me give me like more skill on like handling delicate objects and
Yep.
handling things of expensive quality, and like that could help me like with museum collections and like dealing with artist work and like money in general. And
Yeah.
then like I was working at it, like I did dance all throughout college, but like I worked at a dance studio, and like that something I that actually never occurred to me. I did that just 'cause like I enjoyed it, and also like I had the skills to do that.
Yeah.
But like it wasn't until I started like applying for internships in the city that people were like, oh yeah, like tell me more about like your dance career, and like made me realize, I'm like, oh, that is like an alternative form of learning that I'm able to translate into something similar as museum learning. Like learning in a gallery is much more like learning in a dance studio than it is learning in a classroom, like where you're sitting at a desk. And so, all of these like random things that I was doing, or things that seem random, actually, like I was able to try to spin into a way that were helpful to me. And
That's
like some of
amazing.
those were things that I was, actively doing in the moment where I was like, okay, I can work here, and like that can be helpful because of this. And then there are some things where I'm like, later on, I'm like, okay, now I can like figure out how to spin that to my advantage. And I think that also kind of like goes in the same tune of like what you're saying, like it doesn't always have to be so like linear. Like, like you can do these S art-esque things, and they can be relevant to whatever you decide or whatever you get into later.
Absolutely. And I that is such a good point. I want to like double down and highlight this because this is something that, again, I think there's like a cultural element to class too, where, I grew up when I learned how to work, I started my job the week I turned 16 because it was the first time it was legal. I mean, I babysat before that, but my first like real W-2 job, right? And how I learned how to work was you work hard, you put your, nose down, you don't brag, you just clock in, you do a good job, you try your all. And those things are valuable. However, one thing I've learned as I've sort of, I don't know, experienced different income levels, both client and, all kinds of things, is that whenever you move up to the arts, there's a lot more emphasis on like kind of what you said, like spinning your skills and like using the right language. Like it really is like unlocking a key and taking those things. And then also like you brought up dance, and I'm sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that growing up that you did it because you loved it. And I wonder if people like discourage you from doing it because it wasn't super practical. Like it wasn't like you'd be making more money, whatever, working at some other place or doing some other thing. But you did it because you loved it. But I feel like you were saying that it helped you because that skill set fit more into the arts. And so I feel like I'm rambling, but this is really important because I mentor artists. This is something I'm always trying to tell them. It's like you have to be able to sort of think, work, and sell yourself like someone who works in the arts. And typically, what that looks like is like exactly what you did, spinning skills that are more like blue collar into like fitting into more of a white collar, like upper, arts space. Pursuing things that maybe middle class, lower class people might be like, hey, that's not going to be fruitful. Like you need to focus on like real work. But actually that art, that dance expression ended up helping you in this career. So I guess I don't have like a direct piece of advice to someone listening other than to say like, it's not so much that like you're being like as a working class person, like having a hard time getting into the art world because you don't have the skills and you're missing out that all these white collar people has to have something that you don't, but rather a lot of it is like spin and like staying tethered to the arts in any capacity possible.
Like I something that like when I first got into grad school, because I had never had an internship, and I was like, that was like everyone's got to have this fancy internship, and I never had one. Like all I'd ever had is jobs, like that was the only experience that I could have on my resume. And like I was really lucky to have a job at a museum, like a real job, before I moved to New York, which is kind of like what made me want to move here and like go to grad school, which that's like a whole story in itself, which is really funny and like kind of a story on scrappiness. But
We'll do that next, yeah.
but getting here and like only having jobs on my resume, like I remember one of my mentors at grad school was like, you really should like add in some of these like museum things that you maybe did like volunteer, or like like what you're saying, like spinning it and kind of just like, it's not lying. Like, it's all stuff that you did. It's just like presenting it in a way that seems like fancier.
Well, like
You know,
if you
it's like
weren't, you
putting
know,
that big, beautiful ribbon on like a brown package.
exactly. Well, if you weren't customer facing, like that might seem like, okay, well, you're working a fast food job. That'll never come, you know. Don't say that you worked as an associate at Long John Silver's. Like instead, say that you are like client facing. And I mean, I'm not even
I mean, like
exaggerating.
I worked at like a golf course literally as like a cart girl, and I remember I was like so stuff about like knowing the ins and outs of golf course, like
I mean, seriously, it's not even hyperbolic. I mean, if you wanted to like, you know, buddy up with a writer friend, or if you only have like ChatGPT at your disposal, like have it. Like art jargon is so like, again, I don't know any other field, so maybe, but it feels so niche, you know, in the sense that it's like it's a lot of like pomp and circumstance. Like there's always the joke about like writing your artist statement and everything's like an introspection of like a juxtaposition of blah blah blah, you know, indexical painting. And so much of it is like I really think learning that language and learning how to like take, like it's not that it's like, okay, you worked fast food for 5 years, your life is over. I get why it would feel that way to some people, but it's actually learn how to spin it. And it sounds like doing a lot of what you did, but I'm very curious about your getting into grad school. I was very tantalized by that story. Can you tell me about that?
Well, I do want to say one thing, like drop a real nugget of information, I think, that is helpful to like what we were just talking about. But there it's available to anyone online. You can just Google search like NYU Tisch School of the Arts resume help or something like that. And
Oh,
there's a
okay.
PDF, and it has this amazing, it has like an example of like someone's real resume, and they've like marked it all up and stuff. But there's this really great page on there that's like, oh, you should be using this word instead of this word. So it's like helped and like assisted, which it's like something fancier than that that I can't think of right now. But that's a really good like actual resource that I send a lot of people and like helped me a lot whenever I was working on that stuff, just to have something like tangible.
That's amazing. What a great resource. Thank you so much. I'll put that in the show note.
And well, grad school, kind of like the precursor to grad school, was me getting my job at the museum, which was on campus w at where I went to school, which like I went to school in university in my hometown. So like I had heard of the place, like, you know, it wasn't until I was actually a student in the School of Art, which is like right behind the museum, that I like became more involved with it. Like I would, you know, go to the oh exhibitions, go to the openings. Like I remember there was an opportunity for us to volunteer as students for like a fundraiser that they did. And so like I did that. It was like a one day thing and got to go, you know, like eat fancy food and stuff. So I was like, this is great. But I kind of made friends with the girl that sat at the front desk, woman, I should say. She was older than me.
No, I get you.
And you know, I talked a lot to her about like how she got her job and like, you know, like what she thinks, like she would send me like internships and stuff like that, which nothing ever really panned out. And I remember at the end of the year, I was like, look, like what can I do to be here? Because like I really like this space. I really want to be a part of it. But I can't do things for free. I'm sorry. Like I just can't. Like it's gonna have to be a job. Like I don't
You
know if
can't
y'all are
afford to,
looking. Yeah, I'm
literally.
like, I don't know if y'all are looking for like some sort of assistant or something, like happy to work for minimum wage, like just anything. And so I met with the director, and like he was like, yeah, like let's give it a semester, let's try it out. And so I started working there like as a student assistant, and then they let me stay after I graduated, and I was just like a museum assistant. And I was literally like, granted, everything costs a little bit cheaper in Beaumont, Texas, but like I was literally making like $10 an hour at this museum, and like I would leave every day and I would go teach dance at the studio, and then I would like go to, I helped out with the college's dance team, and I would like do social media and stuff for them. And like I'm doing like all of these things because I like really wanted this one thing to work. And that's what inspired me to want to go to grad school. And like I applied for like a few different programs. Had a lot of, I had never written like a super intense essay like we had to submit for grad school because I did art education, which is like primarily like studio work. So like I had all my friends like reading over my stuff. I'm like, does this sound good? Please help me.
Yeah, I
And
get
then
you.
I obviously ended up getting in to NYU. I got like a partial scholarship, so I only had to pay like half. Well, I didn't pay anything, student loans.
Defer that
Don't,
forever.
yeah, don't come at me. Like, I know not everyone feels comfortable with that, but I'm like, no,
No,
screw
I'm with you.
let the government take care of
100%.
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So
I
yeah.
love that. I love that story. You know, there was so many key, I think, insightful parts of that. First, it's really nice to hear like a real story. I am a big believer in like hearing like not just like big ideas, but like actual examples. One of my favorite like little tidbit stats is like, I forget the number. I'll put it in the show notes, but there's like you are significantly more likely to go to college if during your, middle school, high school career, you step foot on campus. Like it can literally be like an event not related to going to
Yeah.
college. It's something about seeing it clearly that I think makes it more tangible. And I think one of the biggest hurdles for people who aren't kind of in arts worlds,
Yeah.
their parents aren't into art, they just love it, they're working class, they're blue collar, whatever it is it's hard to like envision what that would look like. And I think even just simply by you saying that story, I think it's going to help some people paint pictures. But the thing that stood out to me about that is the like how you sort of interacted and like networked. I mean, network kind of gets like, especially, it gets kind of a bad rap, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
But it is like one of the most important things you can invest in. And I really think of it investing like in the same capacity as like investing money, like taking, like it sounds like in the beginning you were able to volunteer, weekend here, weekend there for free,
Yeah.
be a
Yeah.
familiar face, be, friendly with people, like in the just like the normal
Yes.
way, that you're
Which I
friendly.
was talking about with someone recently that this is like a little bit New York art scene tea, but like someone made a comment to like someone I know, and they're like, "How does Mac get invited to all this stuff? Like she only has like
Little
3,000
shady.
followers or something." And my friend was like, "Because she's nice to people and people like having her around, like that, like people really don't realize sometimes like that will take you really far, just like being
Yes.
eager, being hardworking, being like excited to like be there, and also just being like real and friendly and like making people feel like, they can talk to you. Like I
Yes.
really do think that that is like such a big thing that, like people say like the soft skills, but like
Yeah.
it's important. Like it's so important and like can get you really far because I really don't think like I had shown those people at the museum that I could do
Yeah.
anything that they wanted me to do, but I was like, I have grit. I'm here. I show up. I'm a part of this community, like even in the smallest sense, and like I want to be a part of it more. And I think that they saw that and they were like, okay, fine. Yeah.
Absolutely hard underline on that. I mean, it's such a key, like even in my career, and I know our careers are different, but like I've had things where like I've gone to like a pop-up market and I've shown art and I've just like had a conversation thinking that I'm just like enjoying this person's company and like killing time. And then, 3 or 4 years later, this is a person who was like a student, couldn't buy anything at the time at the pop-up. They just wanted to say hey to me. And
Yeah.
then they're furnishing their first apartment with their first grown-up job and they buy like a huge disco ball. And like they're like, hey, we had a conversation. And so, I mean, it just really pays off. Like, I think I was always icked out by the term networking because, again, I don't come from a space where people networked. People just
Yeah.
clocked
No,
in,
I mean
clocked
that was
out.
definitely something I was like, I do this. Like I'm just like trying to make friends, kind of like if you like see it as like kind of like another version of that, I think that's like helpful. Like just trying to meet
Absolutely.
people and like make friends and like
Yeah, be excited about people, remember people's names, show up, be excited. And I think a lot of
Yeah.
like what you said earlier, like being obsessed with it, is like that reads through. Like if you are the thing that ties everyone in the art world together, at least hopefully, is that everyone loves art, in some
Yeah.
way, whether it's the money part or the, whatever. We're all
Yeah.
here because we enjoy art. And I think when you show up to places and you're kind and hardworking and you share that passion with other people, like yeah, it goes a tremendous long way. Like it really is so important. And if someone just takes away something from this, like take that away, like
Yeah.
show up, go places, and physically, be where art is. And that brings me to like the New York of it all. Like I'm very curious. New York is like, in the Anglo-speaking world anyways, like kind of the biggest, I would say, maybe, I mean, we're probably both biased. I mean, you live in New
Yeah,
York,
yeah.
but It's where you go if you want to look at cool art. Like, it is the place to go. So, was that part of your choice to like move to New York? Like, I'm curious about that because that's a big leap. And I think it's like amazing that you did it, but I'm curious like what that thought process was like.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll say like a precursor that like I never like grew up being like, you know how some people are like, I'm gonna move to New York one day. Like I had never been to New York until my sophomore year of junior co or yeah, my sophomore year of junior college. My dance team, the Killer College Rain Dreads, if you want to look them up, we performed at Macy's Day Parade. And that was the first time and only time I had ever come to New York before I moved here. And like I remember enjoying it, but I wasn't like, oh my gosh, this like is the best thing ever. Like I want to come back here. Like love this place. Like I enjoyed myself, but I, you know, it felt like I felt so distant from that at that time. Like that didn't even like cross my mind, you know? So when I was applying for grad school, like I had said, like I studied studio art education in undergrad. But I was working at the museum, and so I was like kind of really wanting to like lean into the museum part of things because I didn't want to just end up being like an art
An art
teacher at a
teacher,
school. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I just wanted to be in a museum. And so, you know, like talking to my boss at the museum that I worked at, who's like my mentor to this day, like he has a master's in art history, and like that was like what most of the people that he knew that had like a robust career in museums, most of them had master's in art history, but like museum studies is kind of like a new thing. And then like there's also like I had applied to a program at UNT that was like art education, but you could get like a emphasis in museum education or something like
Interesting.
that. And so I had applied to like a few different places like U of H art history, UNT. I even applied to like University of Kansas. And NYU was the only one that I had applied to in New York, and it was because it was a museum studies program, and like obviously the appeal of like there being so many museums there. I kind of always forget about this because it feels like so long ago, but my last semester in school, like in undergrad, I had randomly like applied for an internship at the Whitney because it was
Oh,
a museum
nice.
that like had always in my mind been like somewhere that I really liked, and like the museum that I worked at home, people would say that the architecture looked similar to whenever the Whitney was at the Brower Building, and so people'd be like, oh, it's like the Whitney of Beaumont. And so in my mind I was kind of like, these places are like related, and I had just like offhand applied for an internship. I got an interview somehow. I went back and I looked at the thing that I like submitted for it, and I was like, how did I get an
Oh,
interview for
that's
this? Like my
amazing.
resume was trash.
Oh, that no, that's I mean, it
But
was
I
meant to
wrote in
be.
my cover letter about like the connection that I had, and I was like, that would be cool, whatever. Anyways, got an interview. COVID happened. They didn't do any of the internships. So
Oh,
like they
no.
did like a supplemental program for us where we got to like get on Zoom and like meet curators and stuff, but like it wasn't any sort of semblance of like a internship. But that was like the first taste I had of like the New York art world, and like also the like possibility that like I could do something, like even if it was just an interview, I was like, okay, like this could be something, like if I can get just an interview, like maybe I can do more. And so I think that was what ultimately like led me to apply for the NYU program. And once I got in, like it kind of nothing else, like I'm like everyone was like museums, New York City, like you know, there's nowhere else. And like, I remember talking to my boss, Dennis, and being, he was like, it will be so easy for you to go there and do that and then go anywhere else you want. Whereas, like, if you go to Kansas and then you try to go to New York or something, like, that's going to be much harder. And I was like, that's a good point. And he was like, no one can knock like an NYU master's degree. And I was like, true, which now I'm like, maybe they can.
No.
But
No, but
at the
that's good
time, I was like,
advice though.
yes.
It's not terrible advice. My painting professor, who I adore, like he said something kind of similar. He said, if you can hack it in a bigger city, like start big and it's easier to bump down, kind of regardless,
Yes.
at least in the arts, like where you choose to go. And I mean, and that's always it another theme I'm like pulling out of your storytelling and kind of what you're sharing with us is it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like You never tell yourself no. Like you let someone else tell you no, you just like go for it. Like you maybe didn't feel so qualified to apply for the Whitney, but you did anyways. And then like it turned out it worked.
Well, and I will say, like, when I think back about, like, I don't even like remember submitting the like application or anything, but like when I think back on like getting, I was like almost like embarrassed to admit that I had like applied because people were like, oh, you've like, you know, like, but like then when I got the intern or the interview, I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like I didn't tell anyone that I had applied and then I got, I was like, oh, nice. Like, you know, I didn't tell anyone I applied to NYU and then I got in and I was like, suckers.
I love that.
But I think as I've gotten older, something that I, and I think that like this kind of goes into like TikTok as well, and like anyone kind of like putting themselves out there, and like artists as well, like putting yourself out there in a very visual way for you to be perceived, you know, something that has helped me a lot is like just reminding myself that it's okay to like not be great at something. It's okay to like, I think the phrasing is like, I'm not afraid to be seen trying, you know, and that has helped me so much, like in my professional and my personal journey. Like, you know, we're all just kind of figuring this out. And if maybe I look a little bit stupid on the internet or I talk to someone and they think I'm dumb, like whatever, you know, like I'm figuring it
100%.
out, you know.
Oh yes, I'm right there with you. It's actually something I'm so incredibly passionate about. I had a podcast episode titled Why Cringe is like class conscious or something like that. And basically what I said is like, one of the things that always frustrated me again about that sort of unequal landscape, which again, it's part of it, but like to people who are sort of struggling with that in a way that I struggled with it, like one piece of advice I always say is like, you can look around and see people around you who are because their parents are helping them, they're not having to go for the like cringier jobs, or they're not having to like moonlight as a waitress, or like do the things that can seem a little bit more embarrassing, or whatever it is. It can be really a lot of things. If we allow whether it's like being perceived on social media, or like being embarrassed to share that you're working another job, or whatever it is, to like keep you from doing things, then the only people who are allowed to pursue the arts or follow their dreams are people who have the security to not have to be cringy. And that
Yes,
is like
exactly.
anti my class sentiment. You know what I mean? Like it makes it to where the only people, and not only is that a bummer for people who want to break into that, who maybe aren't from that class and don't have that security, but also it makes the art suck. I mean, art is better when you have a variety of viewpoints and people from different cultures and countries and classes and backgrounds and abilities. Like we need that, all of those things make art better. And so not even is it just like a letdown for yourself to not allow yourself to be cringy and show up, but you're kind of letting everyone down. Like we need to see your artwork and hear your voice in teaching, and see you curate things in museums. And
And I think too, like something I like think back on in my own journey is like I remember like, well, just admitting like meeting with the director for the first time, like I'm sorry, I can't work for free. Like that's not something that's gonna work for me. And like being in grad school and like, you know, our professors like sending us unpaid internships, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I don't have the resources to be able to apply for anything unpaid. And like, let this go to show, first of all, that's like a whole nother, I could talk about that for years. But like I never replied for an unpaid internship. Like I just refused to do it. Like I'm not gonna be a part of that. And also I couldn't be a part of that, even if I wanted to. And so I, you know, people would send me stuff and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I can't apply to that. It's unpaid. And like even now to this day, like some of my friends that I went to grad school with, they'll like send me full-time jobs and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I will not be applying for a job where I get paid $48,000 a year in New
In
York
New York
City.
City.
Like, no. And I'm not afraid to admit those things. Like I just don't have the resources for that. And like, speak your truth. Like, okay, if they feel embarrassed or like if they feel uncomfortable by you being real, like, you know,
And if they try to
obviously
make
speak with
you
discretion with
uncomfortable.
who you're speaking with, but
Right,
like,
right,
you
right.
know.
No, that's such a good point. And especially because like I know a lot of people who would feel uncomfortable bringing that up, because there is, something I remember in college feeling a lot of is like, I can't let anyone know my background. And it's looking back, it was kind of stupid. I'm sure everyone could clock me, but But it was always like the not wanting to bring up like, hey, I need assistance, or like one of my big things I remember, because I was a cross country athlete, that's how I was able to pay for my college. They required you to get insurance through the school, which the school paid for, but you also had to have secondary insurance. Well, my freshman year I was on Medicaid, but my sophomore year it expired because it expires on your 19th birthday. And so I had to go to my coach, and he looked at my FAFSA. Like, looking back, I'm like, I should have known, but whatever, whatever. 19-year-old Sari was doing her best. But I had to tell him, like, I don't have insurance. And like, that was like uncomfortable. I had to go through meetings and like, and it's the thing is, like, if I hadn't done that then, if I let the shame be like, I'm just going to stop coming to practice and work my job at Andy's and, just live my life, like, I would have robbed myself of so much. And so I think, it's easier said than done. And obviously, in hindsight, I'm proud of myself. But like, a lot of times showing up can be like, letting yourself feel the
Even if
like,
it doesn't feel right. Yeah. No, because I feel the same way. Like, I look back, like, whenever I was in junior college, and like, I remember like a similar kind of sentiment where like I didn't have insurance and like I had cracked my tooth. And I remember like I was just like in so much pain. Like, I was like so upset. Like, I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna go to practice and like don't dance all day. And
And
I
like smile.
remember, and I remember one of my classmates told our like director, and she like got me an appointment at a dentist that like wasn't gonna make me pay. And I remember I was so mad at her. I was like, that was so embarrassing. Like, and now looking back at it, I'm like, there's so many times where I'm like, I'm doing this all on my own. Like, I'm girl boss, which like for the most part is true. But then like I think about situations like that, and I'm like, I wouldn't have been able to do the things I do now if it hadn't been for like those small situations like that, or like, people helping me pay for my books, or like people taking a chance on you, whatever, and like back then I was so embarrassed by all those things. And now looking back, I'm like, sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do, and like it's a
Do
little
it.
embarrassing, and you'll make up for it later in life doing it for someone else, hopefully.
Yes, 100%. No, I have a big give back mentality because of all the like breaks that I've gotten from people and, just like help and handouts and whatever you want to call it. It's like, it's all part of it. But yeah, I mean, I think that's why it's so important to have like kind of like a mission statement. Like, those things can feel really hokey and like cheesy, but I think it's easy to think that's hokey and cheesy when like your lows are just like, oh, you just got rejected from, not that it's just, but you get rejected through email. But when you're like actually having to show up with like a handout and like be like, I need help, like you have to have something a little more substantive. And I will say, it's also nice to like, you have been like a shining star in kind of my like orbit of like other people are doing it. Like, I really enjoy following a, like I said, a diversity of like art, because like that's the great thing about art is like you get the diversity of people and community. But having another person in the arts world who grew up similar to me, like that has been really encouraging. It doesn't make me feel like kind of, I don't know, weird. It can make you feel kind of weird when you don't see a lot of yourself represented.
I'm gonna
Oh no.
cry.
I mean,
No, that's
seriously
really
though.
sweet. And like, I also think like I obviously feel similar about you, but also like I think that's another reason why I have like tried, I don't share everything on my TikTok, but like I try to be like, honest and like, fruitful with the information that I have, because I don't know many people that are honest or like speak loudly about their experience that's like as niche as ours. I'm sure that there are more people, but they just like don't speak about it. And I'm sure like it's nice for people to be able to like see someone like us that they're similar to and be like, okay, yeah, like maybe I can figure it out.
100%. Yeah. And it's tough though, because like kind of something you mentioned earlier is like, especially when you're like white and like physically able and like you've got, a lot of other advantages. Like, I remember early in my career having a point where I was like, do I even want to talk about this? Can I just have a career and just be, a woman artist and that's my thing? And I remember, like, it's the embarrassment, shame, that kind of sensation coming up, because it's like I had been conditioned not to talk about it. Like, do you ever watch the show Friends? And like, Phoebe always had like her random like sad story that would like, they would use it as like a punchline. But I remember feeling like anytime I brought anything up, like my Sari lore, like it always like kind of dampened the mood. So I was like, do I want to bring this into my art? But I found it to be like, I have gotten messages throughout the year of people being like, hey, I've opened up and shared about this, or I'm in my arts program and like I, make work because you make work about it. And if I really believe what I say, which is that art is better when there's a diversity of viewpoints. And I realized I kind of had to like pony up and just be like, you've got to
Yeah.
like put your money where your mouth is. And in hindsight, it's been fruitful. It's been a good thing. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who like want less to do with me because of that, but I've
Yeah.
also connected to people who I know it's been impactful for.
Yeah.
But it brings me to, I want to ask you more about like your identity and working in the arts, balancing sort of like where you come from, but like, how has your experience in the arts like shaped your personal identity, like how you view yourself, especially this many years in like working as an arts professional?
I feel like it's something I think in my head, like every time I go somewhere, every time I'm like meeting new people, like it's almost like what do I call it? I've called it like a tapeworm before because it's almost like this thing inside
Oh
me that like
my
consumes all my information as well. And like sometimes I hate it, and then other times I'm like, it might be important.
Yeah.
But like it is hard sometimes. Like I feel like it, let me start over. The
Yeah.
like the times when I notice it less is whenever, because it almost does feel like a chip on my shoulder in a way to be like, I've had all these, like that TikTok sound that's going around like there right now. It's like, I'm not a bitch. I'm a bitch with a
Oh
backstory.
my gosh,
Like, I'm like,
yes.
that's me.
100%.
And like,
Add that in.
like whenever I'm at the museum and I'm working with children, I think in hindsight, I'm like, I've never thought once, like, this kid's growing up on the Upper West Side, like he's gonna
Yeah.
be the president of JP Morgan Bank one day. Like
Probably,
I
yeah.
never think those things. Like I'm with children that like I enjoy, and like I'm getting to like teach them things that they maybe wouldn't have gotten to learn anywhere else, or like that I didn't get to learn, like, and like
Yeah.
what a privilege that is for like me to be able to experience them, like experiencing something that, if what if I had like been in a children's class at a museum when I
Yeah.
was 5 years old, like, who knows? So like those are the moments where, I feel like almost like a weight's lifted off my shoulders and I don't have to worry about those things. It's whenever I'm around other adults
Yeah.
that I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm maybe thinking a little bit too much about what tax bracket you're in.
Yeah.
And like even to like the juxtaposition of like galleries and museums where like people can say what they want about people can have their opinions, but I've never felt as comfortable at a gallery as I do at a museum, even though like the galleries are free and whatever. Like just like the types of people that
Yeah.
normally associate with galleries are people who have the money to purchase it, and like that's
Yeah.
just not always like my vibe.
Yeah.
It's like not my vibe
Yeah,
actually.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that I keep it real. Like I said, like I'm okay with admitting to people like, I'm sorry, like I can't do that, or
Yeah.
whatnot. Or like people often will be like, oh my gosh, you work so much. And like I'll be like, yeah, it's really fun, but also I
Yeah.
have to.
I have to. It's part of it.
Like I'm
100%.
okay with making people a little bit uncomfortable if that means that they like understand the reality of a more broader experience. Like I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
No, I think,
did that
well,
answer the question? I felt like I was just
100%.
like
Yeah. No. It's good. And it kind of brings me to the next part of like that I want to chat with you about, which is like, okay, change. 'Cause, a lot of this is like, your story and then, experiencing the art world and how you've sort of navigated it, best practices, learn how to spin, your artist statement and your resumes have great connections. But, going forward, like wanting to see change in the art world or in museums, wherever you sort of show up in your work, like how do you see like what how would you change it if you could like press a button and make the art world more inclusive? I know in like all fronts, but let's just go with like on a class level, just because we would be here all day because the art world does need a diversity change
So many
majorly.
layers.
Oh my gosh, yes. But class-wise, like if that's what we're gonna zero in on, what do you think? Like, I know you mentioned internships. I'm assuming that might be where we go, but what would you change if it was to be more inclusive to people who wanted to be part of the art world?
Yeah, I mean, something I A lot of people have different opinions about like unpaid internships and things like that, but it really is such a precursor into getting involved in the arts, like on so many different fronts. Just not like even just a, like a professional level, like, going from school to like kind of transitioning into, a proper job. But like, I feel like that's most people's kind of like first taste of what it would be like. And it's super inaccessible. Like, I think something I think about a lot is like the people that are able to take these unpaid internships and have the resources to do so. I genuinely believe that they're being exploited. And then in the same hand, like we're continuing this journey of excluding a whole group of people out of this because they don't have the resources to be able to even apply to these things, and people will be like, oh, well, just wherever you can get it. No, like that shouldn't be the case. Like everyone should get paid for labor for what they do. If you're there working, like, period, end
A
of
hundred
story.
percent.
Like, I think that is something that like drives me up the wall. Like, I think about it so much and it bothers me so much. And then like also like living in New York, I think I've like told you about this before, but like there's these like 20 something year old artists who like want to hire a studio assistant, hire a studio assistant, but really they want to exploit them because they're not paying them. Don't call it hiring. You're not hiring them.
Volunteer
They're
seeking.
volunteering for you. Say you're looking for a volunteer because, like, I mean, that's the reality. Yeah, that I'm like super.
No, I feel the same way.
I
I've
let me
had
get off my soapbox before.
No, you're so right though. Yeah, I mean, I've had over the years a couple of moments where I've needed studio assistance and I always pay like $20 an hour. I'm like, this is not, we're not doing the minimum wage thing. And if I can't afford to do it, then I can't afford to hire someone.
If you can't afford to pay them, don't have them. That's how I feel about the museums too. I'm like, if you need an administrator so bad, but you can only pay them $48,000 a year and they have to have a bachelor's degree and be able to work weekends and weeknights, no, you shouldn't hire them because you don't have the money for it because their
Absolutely.
college tuition costs more than what they're making in a year.
100%. And a lot of the, 'cause I talk about this a lot. I'm with you, right? I'm totally with you. People have pushed back and they'll say like, oh, but it's like an opportunity and, blah, blah, blah. Onboarding takes 3 months. They're doing you a
And to that,
favor.
I simply say no. Like, no.
No, but it's so true because here's the thing is sometimes people make the mistake of conflating resources with like effort. You know what I mean? That it's like, well, if you want it bad enough, you'll do it. And the thing is, what that ends up leading to is like, there will always be some people who don't have the financial security who go after things like that, right? That's just, it happens. This is America. People do that. But a lot of times it can put them into really unsafe positions where they're having to stay with like a boyfriend who's maybe not safe or they're living in cars. And I feel like it's one of those things where it's easy to write off and say, oh, well, if you're passionate, you'll do it anyways. You'll find a way to show up. But especially in a city like New York, where like you can't like moonlight doing a minimum wage job. And like, I mean, you barely can do that anywhere. I mean, you might in like a small town be able to like get a roommate and do it. But man, it's becoming increasingly rare where I think people are, they hear on the surface, oh, it's an opportunity and that's great. But when you make it to where it's completely free or like an unlivable wage, you're really saying, I'm going to let your parents subsidize my needing an employee. And it's no better than like Walmart, subsidizing, paying their workers a living wage with, government subsidies, in my personal opinion.
No, I 100% agree. And like, I think to that, a lot of people will be like, well, how do I fix that? Or like, what do I do? And I think like on like the most basic level is that like those people that do have those resources, like what bothers me is not people that have those resources.
Yeah, 100%.
What bothers me is there's those people that have the resources and they either pretend like they don't, they're not real about where they're getting their money from, and they're like continuing to like push on this narrative that, oh, I can do this too. And I'm like, no, we're not the same. Like, your parents pay your rent. Like, it's not the same. Like, please stop
100%.
lying. Because that's
No,
what it is. It's like, you're putting on an experience out there that's untruthful. Like, you
Yeah, the
know?
transparency is totally, yeah, and it's a thing. I see this in a lot of different ways in the art world where there's already such like scarcity in some ways with like good jobs and like praise even that like, you know, people look at their workload and you know, if you're working or volunteering at a free internship and you know, you're also doing some other part-time stuff and you have a social life and you need to get 8 hours of sleep, you probably look at your schedule and go, "Well, I'm working hard. Like, why can't I just say I'm working hard and leave it at that?" And you know, to that I would say it's not fair because like you just don't understand the amount of work to like have your survival depend on that and do all of those things. Like
That
sometimes
is a such a mental load that weighs on so many people physically, but like the finance of it all, like even like what I said, like the not having emotional support, like that is something that has like ailed me so much in life and like has made it hard to like for me to want to do things, and like I like people don't give that like enough credit, I don't think.
100%. It's uncomfortable. People don't like to talk about class and, you know, I get it. What's the solution? I mean, I'm always a fan of UBI, you know, things like that, you know, but I mean, it's hard because it's not an easy fix. And the art world in particular, and again, this probably could extend to other fields, but I'm speaking to what I know, is it's this very like, in a way, like progressive, but neoliberal, like market does all sort of environment. And it's just not a space where people are ready to talk about it. But I will say that I also think that the workaround to a lot of that is like art, is having more people with our background saying these things, making a podcast, making art about class. You know, what you're doing on your TikTok, I think is impactful. And like to say like only 3,000, I mean, go speak to a room of 3,000 people. That's
I know, right?
impact.
Like I look at my sometimes like I yeah, I've had the same thought where I'm like, oh, I thought this TikTok was so great and only like 200 people looked at it, and I'm like, I don't even know if
200
I've
people.
talked to a room with more than 200 people before. So like, you go, girl.
100%, 100%. Yeah, which brings me to kind of the like the last parts of this interview, which is like, okay, someone's listening to this, they've made it this point part, you know, of the interview, which means that they likely are re relating or resonating or feeling really moved by a lot of what you're saying. Like, you know, what advice would you give someone who they want to have a career in the arts? Maybe they even want to move to like a New York or an LA or San Francisco to pursue that. Do you have any advice for those people of like practically like how to survive, any tips, but then also like any like broader advice of like mindset you have to do something that difficult?
I think like in the mindset part of things, I remember like looking at all these different like museum professional like Facebook group pages and like, you know, like reading like, oh, like is it worth it? Or, you know, and so many people were so negative, like, oh no, like it's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, you're gonna end up working like at some job in tech after a year because you're not gonna be able to hit. I'm not discrediting any of those people's experience, but I do genuinely believe if this is something you really care about, if you feel like this is like, life's purpose or whatever you want to call it, like if this is like your obsession and you get a lot of joy from this, you're gonna figure it out. Like, you know, that can feel like so belittling, but like I really do feel like if you work hard and you just keep like jamming your foot in those doors and like just doing everything you possibly can, even if it's working at a jewelry store and like doing all of these extra things to like put you in a good place. Like I really do like I would say I'm a realist, but like when it comes to this, like I don't even know why, but there's just this part of me that I'm like, I know that I'm so smart and I know that I have so much to give that I know that this is gonna work out for me. Maybe not now. Like I don't know everything. I don't have it all figured out. Like I love a full-time job. I still don't have it sorted. And there's things that I want to do that like I'm not sure I'll be able to reach that far. But at the same time, like you have to be positive and you have to believe that like it is something that you can achieve and that like you're it's hard, but like it's hard and it's going to take a lot of work, but you can do
Absolutely.
it. You know, like I think that like helps me a lot. Just
Yeah,
thinking
well
like,
said.
you know,
No,
'cause
that's
like
so good.
I look back at like when I was in high school or like when I was in college and like the type of life I was living and like I couldn't even fathom what I'm doing now. Like I would have never thought in a million years I would be working where I work, doing what I do. Like, I couldn't even imagine that that was something that I wanted because it was so far away from where I was. Like, you know? And so you never know what's gonna happen. Like, you just keep working for whatever's next, you know? Like, have your
100%.
big dreams in mind, but like, what can get you to that next, like, rung, you know?
Yeah, that's 100%. That I'll just say, like, that has been my exact strategy too. Like, I never thought I'd be like a full-time, like, I support my husband and myself with my art. Like, he helps me run the business, but like, that is our family's entire profession. And like, you just, I would have never thought, I mean, I got a degree in graphic design and fine art because I was like, well, I love art, but like, that's not a real
Gotta be
job. So,
realistic, girls, as they say.
yeah, 100%. Practical advice. Do you have any? It doesn't have to be like the best advice, but does any like specifics come to mind?
I mean, like I said earlier, like, even if you're working something that feels kind of stupid, like, I remember, like, talking to some of my friends in undergrad and then being like, I don't want to work at Starbucks anymore. Like, I want a job that, and I was like, apply to work at Michael's, you know, like, it's an art supply store. Like, you can talk about, like, you're learning more about, like, the materials that you're working with, and like, you get to meet artists, and, you know, I don't know, like, it's stuff as like simple as that that can like take you a little bit further, which will take you a little bit further, you know, simple things like that.
I want to speak on that just for like the Michaels thing of it all. So I work with Liquitex. I do like teaching, but it's like to stores and stuff. It's like a really random, again, you're juggling 10 things as an artist. But there are people there who work at the stores. We do it virtually, who like are just like it's their high school job, but they're getting to hear what I charge people a ton of money for just by simply being in the arts. So like definitely
Yeah, like,
underscore what you just said.
don't knock it. Don't knock
Yeah,
it.
100%.
I think, like, something that I've gotten better at as I've gotten older, it's still not something that I like I'm 100% on, but like, it can feel hard to like fail, or feel like it's not possible, which I still do feel that way, but there are other times, like, when I came to grad school, like, I'm like, I didn't know if I was gonna be good at it. I didn't know if I'd be able to stay here, you know. Just kind of like leaning into the, like, okay, like, there's no other option. Like, I have to figure this out. I have to make this work because it's what I need to do, you know, and like, not giving yourself a second choice. And more on the practical side of things, like, 'cause you mentioned like moving to the city and stuff, like, I mean, I was working so much leading up to it. Like, I was like having garage sales and like selling all my crap. And
I
like,
love
you know,
it.
I was like trying to be realistic. Like, I remember I like was going on, I mean, housing in New York is crazy. Like, if anyone wants help, like, please reach out to me. reach out to me in general with anything. But that especially is like crazy that I had like no idea what I was getting
Because
myself
there's
into
like
trying to.
broker fees and stuff, right? It's like totally different
I
than
mean,
Texas.
it's like a whole thing. Like, as a person who like doesn't have parents who could like sign like a
Cosine, yeah.
yeah
Oh,
co-sign, like,
yeah.
all that stuff, like, it was so hard for me to figure this out. But like, you know, like, things as simple as, like, you know, I was like, okay, I don't care where I live as long as it's not over $1,000. So like, my first apartment that I had in New York, like, it was like $900 for my room, and like, it was the
Nice.
shoddiest apartment ever, but I had great roommates, love
Yeah.
them,
Aw.
and like, it helped me like build up. And like, now, like, I mean, I like, as I said, I still don't have it all figured out, but like, I live by myself now, and like, I support
I love
myself
it.
in like a small little shoebox studio. It's not
That's
like
amazing. What a flex.
dream,
No, living alone in New
you know,
York, that
but
is like, I mean, that I know that's huge. That's like dreams.
But, you know, like, a lot of that too is like, you know, like, I had to like live with a friend for six, or my boyfriend for 6 months, so that it, until I found a place that could like work with my finances, and, you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, you just gotta be real with like what you can do and how you can do it. And I love the phrase that you always say, like, you gotta get a little scrappy. You gotta figure it out, you
You
know?
do 100%. I love that. I love what you said. I wanted to highlight two things that I feel like are really good pieces of information. And one, it was like you keep saying like don't give yourself another option. I think a lot of people waste a lot of time when they have the option to not do it or to do it. Like a ton of brain power goes to like, am I gonna be able to do this? Can I fit in? And I would say like for me, I always sometimes it feels like it's like ignorance or naivety, whatever you want to call it. But because I haven't had the like Or I could go get a nice job in finance, or, because that option was never available to me, it really was like, and there's nothing against it, but like I was gonna go back to Andy's and scoop ice cream. Like that's all I had. So because I felt like that was my choices, I didn't have a choice. And I think because the energy I would have spent choosing, I put into figuring it out. And I know that there was a lot of luck with that, I'm sure. But I will say, I think there's really power to that. Like, don't question yourself. Just be like, this is what I've chosen. And like, you'd be surprised what committing to that. And doesn't mean it's all going to unfold in like 3 or 4 years, like it would if someone had like the financial support from a parent. No, unfortunately.
Or in the way that you'd hope, like the me having a bunch of student loans is not ideal, but a
No.
girl's got to do what a girl's got to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's never how you envision. I mean, when I was in college, like social media wasn't what it is now. So like the job I wanted wasn't even around, or the job I have isn't around. So that's, the other thing. And the
You
last thing
never
I'll
know what's gonna happen.
totally, you don't. You can't spend your time totally planning it. But the other point that I think you made that I wanted to throw past you is like showing up without an invitation. I think that's a big thing, is like a lot of people who their parents have gone to college and done graduate programs and like maybe even work in the arts, like can kind of show them how to do stuff. And maybe that's not like a formal invitation, but there's a way where your parent, because like I'll do this with my kids. I'll sit down eventually when they're in, high school, and be like, here's the FAFSA, and here's how you apply, and here's how you write your letter. And they're gonna have all that great guidance that I didn't have, for sure. And so a lot of my like scrappiness has just been like, learn to show up places without an invitation. And yes, does it feel awkward sometimes? Sure. But like to what you said, if you can just be nice and be like, hey, I'm trying, I want to do this, I'm serious. Like, it is uncomfortable, but like that does jam your foot in the door. That does get you to where you want to go eventually.
Yes, no, 100%. Even if it's something like as And also, like, I think people sometimes forget that, like, I would say majority of people want to help others, like, especially like people like us. Like, when people message me and they're like, I'm so sorry about you, I'm like, no, like, I'd love to help you. Like,
Yeah, I love
I'm like,
answering it.
I'm busy right now, but like, let's hit each other up next week, like, I remember I would like reach out to people like on LinkedIn and stuff, and I'd be like, could you just like give me a little bit more information or like, that stuff can feel embarrassing at first, but like, people most of the time are like willing to help you and like want to help you and like give you the information, especially like you said, people like us who have like had no one to model that off of and had to figure it out on our own and are still actively figuring it out. It's sometimes nice just to like be like, okay, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm doing, help
This is
a
how it
little
works.
bit,
No,
like.
I mean, that's why I do this podcast, is because like honestly, I just like I get a lot of questions, and I know that for a lot of people, like having a good conversation and hearing it can like help things click. I mean, I not to be too self-congratulatory, but like could you imagine if you had this episode when you were 18 and been like, I don't know if it would have unlocked everything, but maybe a little bit of the struggle would have been taken out, because you're like, okay, you got to be
Or even
scrappy.
just like sometimes a confidence boost is nice,
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Mac. This has been such a good. Do you have any like final thoughts you want to leave the audience with before I let everyone know how they can find you? Any final thoughts?
Believe in yourself.
No, seriously
No,
though.
but really,
Seriously.
I mean that. Like, you can do anything that you set your mind to. I genuinely believe in that, and I am learning that more and more every day about myself. And yeah, like, just try to be a good person, believe in yourself. Like, these are all like dorky things, but if you like really get down to the core of it, it means a lot.
I'm with you. It's the dorky stuff is like, it's true though. Like, be kind, show up, be persistent. And it's tough, because when you're spiraling, you don't want to hear it, but it is true. I
No, and there
completely
will
agree.
be, there's always going to be like the down moments. There are times where I'm like, I had to like pay my taxes, and I was like, shucks. Like, I, had to like try to figure out how to get to a dentist last week, and I don't have health insurance. Like,
Still
there's ups and
scrapping.
downs, there's ebbs and flows, but like, we it's gonna work out,
Definitely,
one
definitely.
way or another.
It will. I'm excited to continue following you, and I know that my audience wants to follow you. So, can you tell us where everyone can find you? I particularly like your TikTok, but anywhere else too.
I would say I'm most active on TikTok. My username is like at Mac MacFacts, MacFacts. MacFacts. But you can also follow me on Instagram, which is MacCumpian, MacCumpian. That's my name.
Do you have a website or anywhere
I have a website. You can look at my website. I have my like resume and stuff on there, but go for it. It's just maccumpian.com. Super fancy. Did it myself. Pretty proud of
Yeah. I love it.
it.
Computer developer part-time. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I'm working on
Yeah.
it.
Awesome. Well, I will send everyone your way, and all of this will be found in the show notes, along with all of the studies and things that we talked about will be down there too. So thank you so much for being here, Mac.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful. And if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Again, thank you so much. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.